You are listening to the Personal Development Project, an initiative seeking to make being us just that little bit easier. Perfect. All right then, Marley, you're with us. Welcome to the 19th episode of the Personal Development Podcast, second one of this new season. I'm yet to edit the last episode that we did, Marley, the one on radical honesty. Radical honesty? That's this one. The one on an introduction to skeetism. I think that was a bit of a momentous occasion in the history of the PD podcast, the PD project. And I think this is almost just as momentous. I've been telling you, I think this topic, radical honesty, it's one of the most important part of our personal development journeys. I think it is one of the pillars of skeetism. And we will get into this. I'll give you a proper introduction, Marley. I'm just going to say, for anyone listening, if you're wondering what on earth are we going on about skeetism, personal development journeys, all of that is available at www.pdproject.co.uk. Go and please take some time, fill yourself in. But today I'm joined with a very good friend, a very frequent guest. He's almost a co-host of the Personal Development Podcast, Marley Gunter. Say a thing or two about yourself, Marley.
Hola. Hello. Frequent collaborator on this. I'm the Chief Community and Culture Specialist at the PD Project. And yeah, radical honesty.
You came to me yesterday.
For me, it's the pillar.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the pillar of this whole thing. What I mean by thing is just ourselves. It's the foundation. I see this as kind of a foundational podcast, and even more foundational where I'm going through and where I'm at my life right now. 23 today. Mm-hmm. At a crossroads in my life, I think this podcast will be game changing. So yeah.
You've been saying that about the past few. Our responsibility, our power to change and responsibility to do so, you said that. An introduction to skeetism, you said that. Hopefully this one can deliver. Now, you came to me yesterday, Marley, what seemed like quite a lot of passion and conviction. Enough messing around, now's the time to have this conversation. Let's get this done this Saturday. We've been talking about this topic for a while, haven't we? For like 4 or 5 months, as we've been grappling with it and trying to figure out what it was. I think I brought it to you first. I think I'd watched a YouTube video about the topic. It's a book, Radical Honesty, How to Transform Your Life by Telling the Truth, by Brad Blanton. I've just started reading the book, but even from the title, I was just like, yes, I'm sold. I need some of this in my life. And then I watched the video. And I came to you. What were your first impressions of the topic then, Marley? Radical honesty. It took a while for people to start to understand it, I think. What were your first impressions?
First impressions was like, what's my man talking about? It's just like, this is more like just... I saw it in kind of like corporate sense. I didn't know how it kind of, you know, existed in terms of this whole self-discovery, personal development journey. I didn't understand. It's only until recently that I'm understanding. Okay, now I understand what this is all about.
And hopefully, in light of that, we can come and actually discuss that very topic. And I'll let you kick us off. If you had to give us an introduction, what the hell is radical honesty? Why are we speaking about it? Why would it help me find myself on my path? Why should it be a pillar of skeetism? why is it going to try and help a million others, as we're looking to do at the PD project, find themselves in their path to make being them just a little bit easier?
Oh, radical honesty. what a start, man. Why it's important, because what I know it's that old what saying. What is it? You know what? I don't know if I can. I don't know if I can answer. Like, what actually is it? Do you? I think your definition would be a bit more of a.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that. I want to hear. What is it from Marty Gunter?
To me, it's a dedication to living your personal truth and bringing your full self, your full entire self to the table. I think a lot of the times in our lives, we don't bring our full selves to the table and we find ourselves trapped in prisons that we've, created for ourselves because of the fact that we're not living with radical honesty. And I think, Eunice, you said this to me on the phone, I think maybe a week ago. I think I was saying, I came at, with radical honesty, I came at it from a completely different perspective than you did. And you said, are you being radically honest with yourself? And yeah, I think too many times in my life anyway, you can see honesty in terms of, I need to say this to this person. I need to say this. I need to say that. You did this. You did that. But that's not radical honesty. Radical honesty is just taking yourself from the shadows and bringing yourself into the light. Allowing yourself to be seen and heard in its entirety, which is uncomfortable.
Yes. Ah, okay. That, if I was giving my definition, radical honesty, almost as just like a slogan, allowing yourself to be seen and heard in its entirety, I think, for who you really are. I can't really add to that. I'd say that's pretty much it. I will go through the whole, there's always a story to how we came here. It's taken me over a year and a half to kind of get to this point. We'll go through that. It started with shame. It started with shame for me. So we're rewinding 2 years ago, back to second year. Before second year, I would say my second year at university, I didn't really have anything that, really made me shameful. Some stuff goes on in second year, and I'm processing that. I'm healing from that. I'm moving on from that. And I feel like I have done that. I feel like, by and large, Eunice has moved on. Eunice has evolved. Eunice has healed. But when I look back, or when people start to try and speak to me about these topics, there's a lot there. There's a lot there that I'm trying to suppress. There's a lot there that I'm trying to hide. There's a lot there that I don't want others to see, because I'm ashamed of it, in total honesty, because I kind of wish it never happened. And as we unbake this, I like to use analogies and vivid imagery. And I was writing some of this stuff down. I want to make a course, basically try and help me be radically honest. I want to make a course to try and help others. And I was writing some of this stuff down. And I was thinking, this sounds quite dramatic. Disclaimer, it may sound a bit dramatic. I think, I'm pretty sure this is just a normal stuff that I'm really hyper-focusing in on. So, I called you at some point. It must have been my third year. It may have been just before first lockdown, speaking to you about shame. I just read a book called Dare to Lead by Brené Brown that really introduced me to the topic of shame. And if we're linking it back to radical honesty, if we're linking it back to being seen for who you truly are in its entirety, what role is shame playing for you, Marty?
Oh, shame. Shame is like, I am bad. You know, there's no divorcing from your actions. You're taking your actions and you're integrating it into I've done bad, so I am bad. And shame is prison, man. Shame can imprison us. It can imprison us to the shadows. And you're screaming to come out, but you just can't do it.
And I think that was almost one of the definitions that I took from that book that distinguished I'd felt a lot of guilt. I think everyone knows the feeling of guilt, and they put some phrases to it. They said, guilt is, as Marley touched on, that feeling of I have done bad. And shame is subtly different. Shame is when we internalize that and when we start to say to ourselves, I am bad. And what sort of an effect, you said imprisonment, what sort of an effect is that having on you and your radical honesty then?
What am I ashamed of? This is the only way I can answer. I don't know. What am I ashamed of? This is where we're coming at it from different ends of the spectrum. Because I don't think there's anything I'm ashamed of.
Really?
To be fair.
Really? That's pretty powerful.
No, there's nothing I'm ashamed of. Because that's always placed me, I don't know, when I look in my circles and when I look at how people interact, I'm thinking, okay, you've let me down here. You've done something wrong here. And it's like, okay, cool. All right, that's no problem. But a lot of the times, and that which really just frustrates me, because I'm coming at it from the other end of the spectrum, just like, be honest. Like, it's no problem. Let's bring it into the light. Let's resolve that conflict and let's move on.
Which is how I go about things. But I think for me, shame is on a much more personal level. And maybe I'll throw this definition at you. Again, from Brené Brown. Shame is the intensely painful feeling or experience of believing that we are flawed and therefore unworthy of love and belonging. Sometimes what we've experienced, done, or failed to do makes us unworthy of connection. Now, that's something, again, in our last conversation, you almost said that's almost like your default position. Explain that a tiny bit. That's where, if I haven't misquoted you or misinterpreted you, isn't shame quite a common feeling, maybe, for yourself?
Okay, yeah. Now, with that definition, yeah. Okay, so what am I ashamed of? Being too intense, being too much, quote unquote, being too much is something that I've just been like, oh, I've got no boundaries, or I shouldn't have said this, or this has made this person feel some type of way, or I'm too intense, I always want to kick on, and I've always felt I'm unworthy of love, because, oh, why can't I just be, you know, quote unquote, like everybody else?
And is it that
that
perceived difference?
I know this is where you're going to take it.
I like that. You knew this is where I was going to take it.
Yeah, the perceived difference. I like that. Yeah, to the
because for me, I'm almost digging in here a tiny bit and trying to figure out what you're saying. For me, my shame comes from a different position, it seems. For me, I don't wanna launch into too many theories. It's touched in the book, moralism. For me, I've always had a very strong this is right, this is wrong. A lot of people say you have very strong boundaries and you try to live within them and you're principled, and it's positive. And I kind of tell myself, okay, this is Eunice, this is the right way to do things. For me, most of my shame comes from when I haven't upheld myself in that way. So for me, most of my shame comes when I've left maybe my boundaries at the table and I'm acting out or I'm doing something that I wouldn't usually do. And then it's that people see you, people know you, people admire slash love you for the person I want to be, for the boundaries I want to withhold. That's what you show people. And when I've stepped out on a personal level, it's, there's a part of me that wants to reject that person. There's a part of me that wants to reject what just happened. And there's fear that others will too. I wrote it in an article, the conversations we're not having, we'll get to that. I seem to have a knack for coming across quite well and giving strong first impressions. And from there, it feels like all I can do is take things downhill. And there's a little part of my brain that is like, people are there for you. People know you. People have connected to the good Eunice, the positive Eunice, the boundaried and principled Eunice. And when inevitably I deviate from that, it's like, oh no, others can't see that. We can't let that get out. We need to hide it. So for me, that's almost all of my shame. And that started creeping up on me a couple of years ago, where I was like, everyone in their youth kind of deals with anger, frustration, sadness. It was quite far down the story of Eunice that shame came into the equation. And if you're looking back, I think it's apt. When you start actually thinking, this makes me less worthy of love and connection, and people will reject you for that, I found it was quite insidious. It affected me quite a bit. Anything you have to say to that?
Do you have any personal? Is there anywhere you've not upheld your boundaries?
Oh yeah, left, right, and centre. Left, right, like I don't know. I'm just assuming we're all humans here, and we all kind of step out from the line of conduct that we'd want. So this is, I think it's just more or less normal. Normal things. Maybe I've said some things. Maybe I've done some things that isn't ideal. And that, because again, I think I'm quite a principled person. That weighs heavily on my spirit often.
That's a good thing. I just like to say, I think that's a positive thing. We need more of that in society.
Yeah.
I'd say with that, yeah.
Yeah,
100%.
We need more of it. Why?
We need more of that. I don't know. I look in society and then I just feel like this concept of shame that you're providing is like, it ties into personal responsibility.
Oh, absolutely.
Love it. You gotta love it, don't you? You gotta love it.
Oh, absolutely. 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 Because I can be very hard on myself. That was, again, when I really had reason to be shame. When it wasn't just here or there. When there was a long period where I'd look in the mirror and I'd be able to tell myself, this is not Eunice. Eunice doesn't do this. Eunice doesn't want to be doing this. But this is a person that stands in front of you day after day, week after week. When I got into this difficult chapter that I had to navigate, and when I made some pretty big decisions as that person, and yep, that voice in my head that's like, we do this and we don't do that. Don't get me wrong, I'm very grateful for it. And I think it is positive. And as you said, maybe society would be a better place if everyone has that. And I'm going to ask you a question just before I continue. Are you reacting like that because maybe you don't relate to the same extent? You've almost implied that it's not commonplace. I don't know.
It's not commonplace. It's not.
Really?
Know, everywhere. It's not. Of course it's not. Because we're coming at it from completely different approaches. From where I'm standing, it looks like you're taking it with pride. Like, I'm a principled man. This is how I do things. And it's respectable, isn't it? It's okay, this man holds himself to high standards. And everywhere I look, it's just like, standards are just shockingly and abysmally low.
And, sorry, after you.
Which is where I'm thinking the society need more of what you're saying. It's like, maybe being too hard on yourself to the point of where you're talking is a positive. I don't know.
We'll get into that, because it's not quite that. Because, as I was saying, I tackled with this. And one of the things we've been saying, Marley, is the typical self-love, self-appreciation. But what really resonated with me is you have to be there for the person you are now rather than the person that you want to be. And it was the last year or so that I really started grappling with that. It is human. I've been using the word. It's human. I'm not some kind of saint. This is just naturally going to happen. I have to learn. I have to grow. I have to make mistakes. And the way I'd treat others, if they stepped, quote unquote, stepped out, the way I saw myself stepping out, was with... Listen, you're human. We all go through this. It was very understanding, very empathic, very, I don't know, how I'd like to treat myself. But I'd look back in the mirror and I'd be like, but I don't like the person. I would accept it in everyone else. But with me, it was like, but I don't like the person that I see. And I worked quite a bit to overcome that. Thankfully, I'd say successfully. And I thought, right, job done. Until I'd never speak to anyone about it. Until I realized, okay, maybe I'm okay with that man that I see in the mirror. Maybe I've moved on from it for good reason, but I know he's still there. I know the image exists in my past. And then it was like, no one is ever going to see that person. That man can't be seen. What he did, it just wasn't a reflection of me. It wasn't the public image that I wanted out there. So I had to hide it. And it was shame that was saying all of that. It was a fear that others, quote unquote, love you for the same reasons that you love yourself, which is that pride in, I'm principled. This is what Eunice does. This is what Eunice doesn't do. And there's merit to that. And it got a bit crazy. Wow. I'd say I've changed kind of how I love myself. I don't wanna interrupt you. You sound like you're saying something, Molly.
That was beautiful. What was that like? How the reasons you love yourself are the reasons why others love you.
That's almost the assumption that I was going off of.
Okay.
The reasons why I would be proud to be Eunice, because by and large I am proud to be Eunice, because I operate within my boundaries. I was like, surely everyone else is loving me in that way. It's kind of like this criteria. Eunice is the person Eunice wants to be, therefore applause and love and acceptance and da-da-da. And then I realized it's just not like that, is it? And then I realized I have very accepting friends who are there for me at my pitfalls, as well as when I'm screaming from Mount Everest and being the person that all of us want to be. But that didn't really seem to be changing things. I knew if I showed them this, if you were one of these people, we had a conversation. I'm not quite going to bring it up now, but we had a conversation that I'd been meaning to have with you for ages. For all of these reasons. And we've had somewhat similar since both ways. And you react and you're just like, yeah, minor. It's like, what was all the fuss about? Because people are kind of just there for me. People aren't there because Eunice does this and he doesn't do that. And I was realizing, okay, people are kind of just there for me. And without that there, once I'd realized that, I was like, okay, surely this just floats away. Surely that man can be seen. No, it wasn't that simple. There was still something that was just like, and I know it's something to do with the way I judge myself, the way I look at myself. It's still all of the same. I did start sharing. I did start opening up. But I still didn't really want him to be seen. And I'm going to take a step back and let you speak, because there's more there, but we've got more time. Do you have anything to say to that? Do you have anything to compare on or contrast to your own experience?
That was a very good teaching moment. I like that.
I don't really know what happened.
Like the love. Yeah, the love. Like, people love you for the reasons that you love yourself. And then you feel like people won't love you for the reasons that you don't love yourself.
Precise. I didn't say that last bit, but that hits the nail on the head. And that's all projections for me. That's all I was just projecting. It was, there's this part of me that doesn't want to love what I did. There's this part of me that doesn't want to love who I am. And it's like that fear is just magnified and projected into other people. We'll get to it. Maybe I'll get to it now. And I've just stolen the limelight. I just asked you for you to compare and contrast. You said one sentence, so I'm going off on one again. So I'm going to pause myself.
No need to pause. Flow. Please flow. Please flow. Please flow. Please flow.
Please flow. This is, we're mentioning Marley, the conversations we're not having book. So this, when I started grappling with this, again, this is first lockdown. I start to grapple with this. I start to see my friends differently. I start to think maybe I could have these conversations. And I realize it's not as simple as that. I still don't quite have the courage. And I put it down to courage. And this is a tale that I say in Article 7, The Conversations We're Not Having. You can find that on our website, www.pdproject.co.uk. But there was this moment where I was like, okay, if I don't have the courage to have that conversation with you guys, let me at least have the courage to have that conversation with me. And I don't know if I've let him know. There's a guy, Malik, a good friend from school. And it was a supposedly small thing. I do intend to have this conversation with him. I haven't yet. Again, I don't quite have the courage. It was a small thing. He probably would be bewildered. But I was so scared that if I... Because he views me as quite principled as well. I was so scared that if he sees that part of me, he will choose not to love me in this ways that I don't love myself for that. And he was one of the first. I wouldn't have thought one of my mates would be one of the first conversations I wrote down in that book. He was one of the first. And I finished it. And I was kind of looking at myself like, Eunice, you are actually such an idiot. Because all of the fears that I was going through, all of those projections that I'd made, I was looking at the person who would, I was detailing these fears, I was looking at the person who would have to treat me in the way I was scared to be treated, would have to view me in the way I was scared to be viewed. And I was like, that is not Malik at all. He would never do that. He would probably be more understanding, more accommodating than I could ever imagine. And again, that was another barrier. That was another barrier of why you will not have these conversations. That was toppled over. But I still haven't had it. I still haven't had that conversation a year later. But that exercise, writing down those books, that writing down those conversations in that book was where I started to form this conceptual framework. What I first came to you with was the conversations we were not having. This is before I discovered radical honesty, but it's the same thing. And what I think radical honesty is making it a way of life for you, making it a way of conversation, a way of communication for you to make sure that there is someone speaking for all of those people you'd rather hide. The framework I used was, we have these shadows and you cast certain parts of yourself into these shadows. They have a voice too, and they want to see the light, and others want to see and connect to them. So that I wrote down, that conversations that I didn't have, that book was a place for them, was a place for all of those people. But yeah, I've definitely done a lot of talking. I do want to hear more from yourself, Marley. Speak to me.
I was just thinking there. So this might be a bit off topic, but I was just thinking there about quote unquote enlightenment, which seems to be a buzzword in I don't know, the self-help community, the spiritual community, etc., etc. And where I've come to my journey on this quote-unquote enlightenment is Eunice, is what you're saying about being the surveyor in your life.
Mm.
You're just a surveyor. You're just there to be aware. Nothing more, nothing less. So I was there
flesh that out. I know exactly what you're talking about, but flesh that out. You're just a surveyor. What does that mean?
Yeah, you're just... You're... I don't know, is it... Can we go deep? I don't know. I'm thinking surveyor. You are, in my framework, the man operating the buttons. You construct your self-image. You have a pretty strong part in creating your reality and through creating a self-image.
Mm.
And in creating that self-image, a lot of it comes from being a surveyor, just being aware, these shadows.
Yeah, a lot of times, even how we got there, was it a lot of times something would happen and we'd both be asking ourselves, like, how are we supposed to pattern that? What should we have done? And after a while, I think we just started saying, just observe it. If I'm angry, you don't really need some strategy to make sure it never happens again, because then you're just pounding on doors that maybe you can't open right now. And that's frustration. And one of the things we just kept on saying is, just be aware of it. Just observe it. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah, leading on from that, the concept of quote-unquote enlightenment being the surveyor is like giving yourself access to all of these parts of yourself. So this concept of enlightenment is you already have the answers. You already have everything you need. It's just unlocking those parts of yourself that you have banished. And can we see shame as the key? Do we want to be exploring where shame lies? Now, for a lot of people, this is dangerous. You know, this is scary, scary stuff. But
one of the things that I heard... Sorry. There's a bit of lag, so I thought you'd finish, but no,
yeah,
continue.
There's a lag, yeah. Sorry, let me sort that out. I was saying, shame is the key?
Shame is the key? Isn't shame the door that... we need a key to unlock. Doesn't shame stand in the way?
Ooh. Okay. I'm just wondering,
because when you say shame is the key, shame almost seems like the enabler. Like it's on us. Like the keys unlock the doors to places we want to go. That's what I'm wondering.
So you're saying shame is like a door rather than the key?
Say the answer's on the other side of the door. The more appreciation, I don't know what we're searching for. For me, shame gets in the way of that. For me, if on the other side of the door is connection, if on the other side, I have a big quote to drop at some point. That it was a voice note that I sent you the other day. That touched me deeply. But for me, on the other side of shame is connection. I feel like shame is that door that's like, I know what's on the other side of it. Maybe there's a peephole. I really want it, but shame is standing in the way. I would say courage is that key. Courage is what allows me to unlock it. Just delving into that vulnerability, taking that leap of faith, and it sounds so stupid, that leap of faith that everyone who you know isn't going to turn around and abandon you as soon as they realise who you actually are.
Yeah, that's funny. That's funny. That made me laugh. Yeah, that's very relatable.
That is very relatable.
Okay. Abandonment. Yeah. The concept of abandonment. Oof, that's very deep for me. That's very deep for me. That the fear of abandonment is something that's just at the core of... It's the heart of my pain. Abandonment. Is that shame. I'm not good enough. I don't deserve to be seen. I'm not worthy of love. I'm not worthy. People don't deserve to see this.
Mm.
And in doing that, you kind of just sign yourself up for disappointment, though, don't you?
What do you mean?
Because it's like, that's what's going to come out. If you don't feel you're worthy of these things, you're not going to receive them, are you? You know, you can only, maybe it's a stretch, but you can only receive what you feel you're worthy of receiving.
Yeah.
And if you don't feel you're worthy of a friendship which is, you know, based upon genuine connection and intimacy and allowing, I don't know, truths to be shared freely, if you don't feel you're worthy of that, here comes shame, closes the door, you're banished to the shadows.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that courage, how this linked round to radical honesty, why I almost just latched onto it. Because radical honesty, I think, is the mobilization of this courage. Radical honesty is the systemic framework, this is how I am keeping that shame at bay. This is how I'm allowing the parts of myself that I've confined to the shadows to step up with me and giving them a throne in the light even. And allowing people, hopefully, to connect to that. Before we dive into radical honesty, you said, okay, that's much more relatable. And I wanna bring up something that we talked about previously. If you don't want to bring up, I'll just edit it out. But that was you'll know what I get at if I say, like you were saying, you see your whole self as in the shadow. Yeah. I was saying being radically honest and realizing what you're ashamed about and looking in the mirror in that way, and having conversations with people you've confided to the shadows, people that you never speak for, people you want no one to see, it can be scary for a number of reasons. And the example that I gave is sometimes those people in the shadows are kind of ugly. And sometimes when you're honest, you have to look at yourself as the villain and not the victim. And what I think you replied is, I always look at myself as a villain.
Trust.
Could you flesh that out a bit more? What was it? What was going on there?
Yeah. Like, in this conversation, I've realised what I'm ashamed about. Mm. Seeing myself on the other end of the spectrum, the villain. I'm ashamed of sharing my quote-unquote gifts and quote-unquote blessings with the world. A lot of my strengths I don't own and I don't bring into the light because I'm ashamed. I'm ashamed, I don't know, throughout my life. I'm going to say perceived. I think the key word is perceived.
Mm.
And you know why I'm saying perceived? Because I think it's a crucial kind of difference in our mindsets. Mm. Why you say perceived and I attach with it. So I'll say perceived. I've always perceived myself to be someone that people don't want to enter into the light. Don't embrace these. Oh, yeah, it's only I've realized like very recently. It's like, oh, okay, I've got a lot to bring to the table. Like, and today, and very angry, 23, woke up so just angry, like, namely against my family.
Mm.
It was just like, gosh, what were you doing? Like, why did you never tell me none of this stuff, that these strengths that I had? All of these things, why am I having to realize it? Rah, I was just so frustrated.
Mm.
And it was that perceived kind of like, I just hid that. I hid a lot of my strengths. You know, I've always considered myself to be, I don't know, understanding of life in a way that most people I meet aren't. Mm. So I've always tried to hide that. Like, oh, I don't want people to see how intelligent I am. Oh, I don't want people to see how, I don't know, disciplined I am. Let me play myself down.
Mm.
Let me not talk up my accomplishments to make people feel better. Let me not do these things because somewhere along the line, I've believed that you're not allowed to do that. It's shameful. You know, this is bad. How dare you step into the spotlight with your talents? How dare you? And a lot of that comes from childhood. A lot of that comes from things people say. And I think that's crucial to realize on your development, the role which, you know, your environment plays in the formation of your self-image and where shame, because I think shame is given to us. Shame is given to us by society, you know, by the environments we're in.
Moralism. This is what this book tells us. Moralism is just that concept of this is the way we do things. This is right and this is wrong. It's not necessarily having morals. There's a slight difference, but this is the way things should be done. And then it's like when you see yourself not live up to that, it's all, there's a big problem there. And some people are a bit less carefree and it's a bit more, I was only ever supposed to do what I was supposed to do. There is no rigid right or wrong. There's just what has happened. And you deal with that accordingly. Some things help us. Some things harm us. But at the end of the day, I don't want to have to sift through a, oh, Eunice, you shouldn't have done X, Y, and Z, and therefore you're this, and therefore you're that. That's the moralism speaking. Where I'm trying to get to is, okay, this happened. Own it, learn from it, move on. Stop trying to tell yourself it wasn't supposed to happen. But yeah, that's a conversation for another time. Was that what you were getting at? Shame is given to us by society?
Yep, it's given to us. Which is the very reason why we lack the courage to step out. Because you're going against society. In a way, you go against your parents, you go against what your friends want, you feel like it. It's perceived. It really is perceived. It's a lot of fear. And fear is usually an illusion. Usually, like, as you're saying, you know, like, I'm sure if you came to me with the things you're ashamed about, I think we had a conversation, didn't we? Do we want to go here with radical honesty? There was things you were talking to me in second year, and you were always saying you weren't, we'll have this conversation. And I was always like, well, what's the problem, man? I'm sure it's not that much of a problem. I'm pretty sure. Like I know you, you seem to be a respectable man with some respectable values. Like, I don't think you've murdered anybody.
We've not.
What's going on? Are we going there with radical honesty?
We're not going there. Partly because we'll be speaking about others as well. Don't get me wrong. Even if we weren't, I'm probably not up for it. But partly because we'll be speaking about others as well. So I want to make sure that if I am doing that, I'm doing it in the correct way, in the most appropriate way.
I was just thinking, the way you were always like, as if it was some heavy burden. And I was like, no, you're respect. Like, you couldn't have done anything.
You helped me out a lot. You helped because you were the first person that actually posed that perspective. It was and still is a heavy burden. And I apologize to all of our listeners for being so cryptic. But this is one of those things where I was looking at something I'd done. I was looking at someone who I was, and I was like, that's not me. I don't like you. I don't like the fact that you're attached to me. I don't like what you did. I don't stand for any of that. I don't want to see you, and I don't want anyone else to see you. And that was a heavy burden. And we've slowly peeled back. I would say none of that right now. So we've made progress in that point. But I finally have this conversation with Marley, and he leaves me almost feeling proud about it. He leaves me like, it was almost like, I respect, obviously it wasn't ideal, but I respect that actually I'm seeing strength in the way you tried to go about that, the way you did go about that, and what happened there. That helped me immensely. like immensely, that conversation there. And that's what I'm getting at. It's like, you think you share it, and everyone's like, right, no, Eunice, he's written off. I hate him. And it's stupid. It is stupid, but I don't know. It's just the way I am. And the nature of these kind of conversations, these topics, you're very unlikely to know if others are similar. But one thing I've learned on this personal development journey is most people, maybe for different reasons, but are probably feeling exactly the way you are about some things that are going on for them.
Mm. Yeah, when you see it in yourself, you can definitely see it in others when they're carrying a burden of shame.
Mm.
You know, a lot of people carry burdens of shame for their lives. They go to the grave with this stuff. It's difficult to shake off, which is why radical honesty is so important, isn't it?
I think this is the time to... We've talked around it. We've given a lot of context. I think it is the time to get into the radical honesty. But you saying, like, we carry it around as a burden. Some of the people I want to have this conversation with, two of the people, some of the most important conversations I need to have with, live with me, my mom and my sister. And I've just noticed there's been a different burden on my spirit since living at home, since knowing, okay, you need to bring some of these things into the light, but not having the courage to do it. And part of the reason why I'm really trying to double down on this radical honesty is because I see this as I said, the medium to mobilize this. And because I know it would just free me up to no end. It is genuine. It's a burden. It's a vexation on my spirit. I feel it eating away at me emotionally. I feel it eating away of the sense of connection that I have. So let's stop messing around. Let's dive straight to it. So radical honesty. I am in the preface to this book, Radical Honesty by Brad Blanton. I liked what he said. It was very difficult for me to get across to people at the PD Project. I liked what he said, and I'm going to read a bit of an extract. And this is the word radical. Initially originally referred to the juice in fruits and veg, the moisture provided through the root. In Latin, it came from the word radix. It later came to mean the essence or substance of things. So radical, in the sense of radical honesty, doesn't mean far out, but rather far in. Radical honesty would be the core of the truth, not just the outwards trappings. Just as there is the letter of the law and the law of the spirit, so is there the literal truth and essential truth. And I think radical honesty, how I've been trying to get it across, is say what you really want to say. If I had to just put it simply, say what you really want to say. Because what typically happens is something will come up. Someone will speak to you. And then it's like, I know what, deep, deep down, I know what I want to say. I know how honest, I know how open, I know how transparent I want to be. I know what's going on there. And then there's just layers and layers and layers and layers and layers of thinking, of getting in your head, of thinking, okay, I can't come across like this, / I have to that. And often, by the time I've handed what I really want to say over to my tongue, it looks nothing like my radical truth. It looks nothing like the essence of my truth. Do you have anything you want to add to that, Marley?
That's like what you're saying. If you're not going to have the courage to have it with others, have the conversation with yourself first and foremost.
Mm.
And I want to get into the habit of that, at least just expressing this anger and frustration and disappointment I feel to the people around me. Having that conversation with myself and then being the surveyor and just letting things just do what they're going to do is job done. It starts with the essence of just having that conversation with yourself, and then usually nothing needs to be done.
Yeah. Usually nothing needs to be done. But usually all the things that best case scenarios can only be had if we speak our radical truth. I can only serve the Mali who Mali really is, not the Mali who he tells me he is, if he speaks for that person, if he let me know. Just a quick example, I remember me and my mum were going somewhere the other day. I think I told you this, Marnie. And I was asking, do you want to walk there? It was probably like a 20-minute walk. I was saying, do you want to walk there? And I could tell she was doing this thinking, and I was thinking, dangerous. And then she said, oh no, maybe we'll get the bus. And I was thinking, you previously indicated that you want to walk there. I was just checking because time had got on. Do you actually want to walk there? So I said it again, and in the end, I was like, hold on. I call my mum Umi's mother in Arabic. Umi, come on. I'm asking you. Don't think about what you think I want to do. Do you want to walk to this place? And she said, yes. And I was like, I can only serve that intuition. I can only serve that volition, is it? I can only serve what you truly want to do if you let me know. And when I apply that on a deeper level to all of my relationships, when I've tried to apply it, Marley, at the PD project with regards to what I want from you and what I want from others and vice versa, I'm giving you guys no chance of being the person I need and want you to be if I'm not communicating my full truth.
Yeah. Trust. Yeah. It's difficult to do, isn't it?
Mm.
Just what do you actually want to say?
Mm.
Just say it
and
get it over and done. Well, obviously, within boundaries, it's not necessary. Just, you know,
it's not an excuse for reckless abandon and just blowing your lid the whole time. But often, like when I've been speaking to you, that's not what you really want to say, is it?
Mm. Yeah. It's difficult to go into those parts, bring it up, and click your fingers. It's frustrating.
Give us an example. Make it real for us.
This is where I can't, because it's like there's a level of awareness that you have to have in order to note it. And it's usually easier for other people to note it.
Mm.
So you'd be like, oh, is that really what you want to say? Isn't it? And then you're like, okay, that makes...
We did that the other day. There was the time recently where we did that the other day, and I was thinking that would be a perfect example. If I don't remember what it is, so I don't know if we're both willing to share it. But were you angry at something? And you had some stuff to say, and I was like, you maybe wish you'd said X, Y, and Z. And I was just like, is that really?
Yeah, I forgot.
Is that really what you want to say? And I was doing nothing but putting words in your mouth. But I thought I'd let you know from the outsider's perspective. And you're like, yeah, that's bang on. So radical honesty for me, I've realized, it is not just, this is the first thing in my head. Let me get it out. Often it's taking a step back and thinking, what's really going on? Questioning what's really going on various different levels. Often I found myself, often I'm hurt, often I'm scared, often I'm frustrated at the way things are going and the way that I have conducted myself thus far. This is me talking about not just blowing your lid with reckless abandon. And I'm frustrated in the way that we find ourselves arguing. And my radical honesty isn't just screaming at you. It's letting you know all of that. That was, it's annoying that we don't actually have the exact example, but I think that's what we touched on the other day.
Beautiful, right? when you can do that. It's beautiful when you can just, all you should ever be doing is just saying what you want to say, and then that's all you can do, isn't it? You can only say what you want to say. You can only do what you want to do. What more can you do than those things within your boundaries? What more can you do?
What about when you overshadow people? Should you really be going into things like one of the assumptions I've been having is everything in my life is supposed to serve me, not in like a slave and master dynamic, but surely I shouldn't be doing this if it's working against me and what I want for myself and others rather than for it. And then also I've noticed when I've tried to be more radically honest with you, I'm a bit blunter. Like, it can seem quite abrupt and rude.
Trust. Fires. Yeah, what was it? Radical honesty yesterday. What was it?
The mental switch. Did you ask me if this... you asked me for some feedback on the message, didn't you?
Yeah.
Is that what you're getting at?
I didn't even ask for feedback. Yeah, I did. It was before.
It was... You sent me a message. I was like, okay, Ellie was the third person that we wanted on this podcast.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, Marley, you work with her, you manage with her. This is a good opportunity for you to open back up communications. And I said, send me a message through and I'll forward it on. And you said it could be whack. And I think I said, I've got it up. If I'm totally honest, it is fairly whack and unlikely to expedite communications in the ways which make our lives easier. And it's stuff like that. I've just had to get used to just telling you. Get used to just speaking with people. And it's like people ask, do you want to do something? I'm just like, no. Just, no, not at all. I don't really have any interest in it. But I feel like I do have a duty to let people know. Because otherwise I'm turning up with my worst self. Otherwise I'm degrading part of our relationship and they can never really understand me. If I just sign up to all of these things that I don't really want to be doing, I'm just signing up to more of that in the future. Which, I don't know, never a good deal.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. Yeah, I mean, the one that killed it was, I'm not giving you the answer, I could propose a solution, but you know, it's important that you make the mental switch. I was sitting there thinking like, nah, what is this? Is this just like some Buddhist initiation? Like, and then it turned out the answer was, oh, can you message Ellie for me? I was thinking, come on. Like, my man's just like, come on, mate, come on. I was racking my head like, is it a trick question?
It's true, though. Right. I'm thinking we've matured quite well through this conversation. I'm thinking we're almost approaching the end. Is there anything that you really wanted to say? Do you think we've done the topic justice? It was a very... I didn't want to script it. I didn't want to plan too much. It was a very open conversation, and I feel like we got some of the core across. Is there anything you think we missed out? There is a quote. There is a quote which maybe if I was better, I would have worked it into conversation fantastically, but I think it's a good thing to leave things on. Is there anything that you would like to say or talk about or touch on before we get to that?
From a personal note, I need more courage.
Mm.
I need more courage. I feel ashamed when I don't live up to the expectations people have for me. You know, I feel, yeah, like, oh my gosh, I can't really live up to this. Like, kind of like He-Man, kind of Herculean kind of. And yeah, I pride myself on that. I pride myself a lot. I love myself for my resilience.
Mm.
But it's like, what happens when I'm not feeling resilient? Can I bring that to the table and allow people to actually help me? Is it like...
Because he has a voice.
I'm actually scared.
He has a voice as well. This is what I'm talking about. Speak for that person. Because in that moment, when Marty Gunter is not feeling courageous, he's got a voice and it's like he goes to Mr. Tongue and this judgmental guy gets in the way and says, actually... Nah, you don't make the cut. We're not going to show people you because we don't stand for you. We don't like you. And he gets muted. And that means someone like me, on the other hand, that may be more than willing to support you in that way, more than willing to understand you in that way, never gets the opportunity to.
Yeah. And I think it's crucial in this, in that maybe a lot of people won't understand you. I think this is a crucial, it's not as if, you know, come in with some radical honesty and then everybody's going to start, you know, relating with you. And some people will hate your radical honesty. Yeah. They'll hate you.
Yeah.
You know, it's a double-edged sword a lot of the times. But I think it's in your best interest. It's like, yeah, it's fair. I think, yeah, we could probably touch on that more, but that's probably for another.
What
another.
Is
this idea, what happens when other people don't like the people, the person that stepped into the light? Because
I don't really have any experience of that. I'm waiting to, because it probably means I'm much more radically honest than I am now. But I don't think I have any experience of that. It's a fear. Don't get me wrong. But for now, that's on the other side of a locked door. And I'm trying to forge my key. I'm trying to gather the courage. And one of the things I think you said is connection helps. Me being able to stand there, like, for example, one of the things I wrote in the article, one of the messages I sent you in a voice note, after I'd just sat down and I've had these conversations, I'd written down these conversations that I'm not having, I said, and I quote, "I'd like to invite you to embark on this journey with me. I'd like to invite you to pull out a notepad, if you have one, and write in it the conversations that I'm not having with people. And as and when they pop up or you're ready to confront them, jot them down with no censorship. Not as a commitment to go and have these conversations, but as a means of knowing what is going on. You can join me in this if you want, but I'm not going to force you to do anything," I said. "I think if you want to get behind this, I'm going to run some of the conversations that I put in my book by you so that you know the person that I am. And because it will make you, and maybe because it will make you feel more comfortable doing similar. I do this so that if you can relate at all to anything that I wrote down about why I'm doing this, you can push back against that tide." And one of the things that you replied with is, "I'll grab that rope with you and we'll climb together." And I think if I've got a message, that's probably what I need most to force that key, to gather that courage. Others being just as vulnerable, being just as open, and helping each other across this line, helping each other to hopefully better connection, to hopefully more radical honesty. That's absolutely a road that I want to embark on with you, Marley. And I really do want to make the Personal Development Project a community full of that. A place where people go for some of that support.
Yeah, because it's not out there in society. Society needs it. I don't think it's out there. It really isn't out there. I wouldn't say we're the only people having these kinds of conversation, but I could say we need more. I'd love to be able to find more places like this. And if I'm able to do my bit in just facilitating that I'm doing this, it would be great if we could do it together. Yeah, that would be
what I don't usually do is speak directly to our listeners. I don't think it's, do they call it the third wall? Does it count if it's a podcast? I don't think I've broken the third wall. If you have made it to this point in the episode, thank you very much. I hope it has brought you some interesting food for thought. Please get involved. I'm sure if you've been listening to my story right now, you know this is something that I've struggled with. And I genuinely do think a problem shared is a problem halved. If you can relate at all to some of the things that me and Marley are getting at, our social medias aren't that active. I wish they were. Our website, we've got details of how to get in contact with us. Send me an email directly. I'm man. pdproject.co.uk@gmail.com and help me. Help me forge that key. Help me get that courage, because I do think strength in numbers and realizing more and more, Eunice, this is just so silly. Eunice, why wouldn't you share that? Eunice, people aren't going to view you in maybe some of the ways that you're prone to viewing yourselves if they were to realize that side of you. And if you think I can help you do similar, please do get involved. Right, Marley, I did have a question for you. Swings back round to you saying you've come at this from a different perspective because you almost see yourself as a villain. So for me, if you think about all of those principles and all of that reason for shame, that's why people get cast to this shadow. That's why parts of myself gets cast to the shadow. That's why I don't want others to see them. You said for you, it's almost as if a lot of those people, or you perceive yourself as almost the entirety of you is in that shadow, and people see it.
Yeah.
So where's the barrier? Because I'm kind of looking at you like, where's the problem? If you're arguably, you share too much, if you're saying a lot of you's in the shadow and people just see it, like you don't really hide it, where's the barrier? What's the door for you? Me is my shame. Me is I don't want you to see that. You're sitting there. Maybe I don't love what you do see, but part of me is too open anyway that you see it. What is radical honesty really doing for you?
It's not really serving me at the moment.
What do you mean?
Because I've said, oh, I'm honest and I'm open, but I'm not honest and open to myself. And it's going to fundamentally have to... I think I'm very open with others, but not open with myself. It's easy to show to others, you know, things that I don't like. You know, I'm always... Yeah, you can kind of relish being the villain to some extent. You can kind of relish it, you know. But it's like, no, come on. Who really sits there wanting to be the villain? You know, if you see yourself as the villain, it's not serving you at all.
So are the conversations probably... that you need to have maybe less with others but more with yourself?
Oh, yes.
That's crazy. Oh, yes. Okay. We really have come at this from opposite sides.
Because I think it kind of leads to a loss of identity on my behalf, because I show a lot of myself to people, but everybody's always going to have a different perspective on who you are. So to Eunice Skeet, yeah, principle, yeah, you look at me and say, okay, he's principled, okay, he's open. Someone else might think, okay, arrogant, up your ass, blah, 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 blah. And it's kind of finding that grounding, shall we speak, which has to come from within. It can't come anywhere else. You need radical honesty with yourself to ground yourself. So when you do come out into the public domain, you're an immovable tree in a heavy wind. You're actually able to have connections with others because that sense of self is grounded and stable. You know, a lot of the times it's hard to be open with people if you feel like your foundations are going to fall apart. For a lot of us, it's a dark pit. You don't want to open the door. It's just a pit of misery and fear. Why open the door? It's better to just keep it closed, keep it mellow, just pretend it's not a problem, it's okay, they don't need to see this anyway, you know. No, you need to see it for yourself. It comes down to, I think, Brené Brown's quote. What is it? Something about vulnerability. Vulnerability is like the vehicle to actually expressing your true self. You can't be who you really are and experience your full potential as a person if you don't allow yourself to be vulnerable. If you don't step with courage, it's impossible. You know, it's impossible. You need courage to love yourself, isn't it? It's crazy.
That's the thing. I'm grateful for it. I do love myself. That's Skeetism, I think, the fundamental aim. Working so that I can look in the mirror and I can say, okay, I am proud. I can see that I've put the effort in to construct myself, my identity, my principles, in such a way that I'm proud of that. I'm proud of the person who I am now. I'd say, thankfully, I feel like I've reached that point. I'd say the second start of Ski Tism, it didn't just stop there. I want to be proud of the person that I see myself becoming. I'd say as well, I've reached that point. The third part is to be able to look back and to say, I'm proud of the person I was. Even in the trenches, even at my weak points, I've owned that. I haven't run from it. Oof. I've owned it and I'm proud of it. And I'd say, tentatively, yes. Yes, I'm proud of that person. But then when I run that through the radical honesty filter, I'm not living this pride. I won't speak to you about that person. I look at it, yep, I understand that. Yep, I'm proud of you, but there's no public image for the person I am, for some of the parts of the person I am. And I try so desperately hard to make it so that there's no public image for some of the part of the person that I have been. And radical honesty is, my mum always used to say, actions speak louder than words. Why it's part of the pillar of Ski Tism is because when I'm sharing it freely, when you can see that person, when you can interact with that person, when I'm actively proud of that person, I think I will be sharing it freely. And that's why radical honesty is so instrumental for me. I'd like to, if we are wrapping up, tell me if we shouldn't be, if there's something else you want to say. If we are wrapping up, Marley, there's a quote. It's a bit of a long quote, but I think it's a very important quote for me. And it's about trust and love. And one of the tenets of this book, one of the tenets of this philosophy is radical honesty really does fuel the connection that we need. And I'll say less because this quote says it. And it says, a great deal has been written about trust and love. And that if you can build a trusting, loving relationship, then people can be honest with each other. I believe this idea is exactly backwards. It is very nice if I feel trusting and loving towards someone. But if I don't feel this way, what can I do about it? Trust and love are feeling responses towards another person. And these responses cannot be manufactured. Either I feel love or I don't. All the emphasis on trust and love results in many people pretending to feel trust and love. Because it is healthy and will bring about closeness, honesty, etc. This adds a new area of phoniness and dishonesty in their behavior. Honesty, however, is a behavior and is something I can choose or not choose. I cannot decide to love or trust, but I can decide to be personally honest or not. And when I choose to be really honest and say what I experience and what I feel, I'm showing that I can be trusted. This is the only kind of behavior that can bring about a response of trust. Trust is my response to a person that I know I can believe. Even if I dislike a person, I can trust him if he is honest with me, and I can respect his willingness to be himself honestly. Likewise, honesty does not always bring about a response to my phony behavior. I cannot really receive your love. It is poisoned by my knowledge that the love is for the image I have created, not for me. I also have to be constantly on guard to be sure that I maintain my image so that your love does not disappear. Since I have shut myself off from your love in this way, I will feel more lonely and unloved, and try even more desperately to manipulate myself and you in order to get this love. In contrast, when I am honestly myself and you respond to me as I am in that moment, I can receive this fully and know the satisfaction of being really related to you. This honest relating is not always joyful or pleasant. It is sometimes sad, sometimes angry, etc. But is always solid, real, and vitally alive. That's what I want. That's what I want. To have been so transparent that you know everyone is there for exactly the person deep down you know you are. Not just the person that you showed to them. For me, that's what radical honesty is about. That's why it was so important that I've been chatting away with you, Marley, for the past however long about it. That's why it was so important that it became a podcast in of itself. That is why it is a pillar of Skeetism. That is why I want to share it with the world through myself, through living it, and through trying to bring myself up and others up through deeper connection, through deeper honesty. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, you personally, yeah. Marley, and to all of our listeners. And again, I've got a lot of people I want to have some conversations with, and I'm going to need a lot of help to get there. So if you did resonate with any of the things that we said, if you can relate, if you have any questions, if you have anything you want to share, please do get in contact with me personally. On our website, www.pdproject.co.uk, on our email, pdproject.co.uk@gmail.com, or on social media at pdprojectltd. For now, well, for me, it's Sunday. I wish you a good day, whatever it is. I wish you a good morning, afternoon, or evening. Marley, I know for you it's Sunday evening. Wish you a good rest of your birthday.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure. It's a different kind of pain. It's a different kind of pain. Crafting your happiness. Crafting your happiness. It's a different kind of pain.